So we started this series 7 weeks ago called Chase the Lion. One quick note, I guess two quick notes. There's still one book available in the back for anybody who may want it. And we also got posters. That's the Lion Chasers Manifesto. And we got posters, 2-foot by 3-foot posters made up now. I have a few of them. There's three are already spoken for. But if you would like one, you want to put it in a poster frame and put it up in your room. You've really, you know, really enjoyed the series and you want to take that with you. We have them. They're here today, so you can take one with you if you want. Okay, so we're finishing today, and then I have the epilogue sermon next week, which kind of could fit in, but doesn't. You know, it's not really part of the series, but it kind of fits in. So that's next week. This week, though, I had to finalize it. Now, the book, Chase a Lion, actually deals with a passage in 2 Samuel 23 about David's mighty men, and there's 30 of them. And we've finished up in 7 weeks, so obviously we've skipped a few. And that's kind of the Samuel does too. He kind of whips through a bunch of them. But there's a few guys he stops on. One of them, of course, is Benaiah, the one who gives us the title series. He's the one who chased the lion into the pit on a wintry day. So that's one of them. But he talks about a couple others. There's not a whole lot of information there. But you know, before we started the series, I knew we'd be preaching on it, and so I spent a lot of time. I read commentaries. You know, I listened to sermons. That's kind of an occupational hazard of mine. I listen to a bunch of sermons. And it was interesting to me how many people seem to think that David's Mighty Men, this section of the Bible, is actually talking about David's army's exploits and the things they did as part of David's army. And they actually miss the timeline by quite a bit. Because every little episodic story which is told in 2 Samuel 23 isn't taking place after they become David's Mighty Men. It's their resume as to how they got to be David's Mighty Men, and most of them took place many years before. And so the thing that's important about that is if you look at it in that context, like these are all the things that these guys were, and they were brought together to David, you see that the God is kind of weaving a tapestry of similar kinds of people. They have a very similar heart, and we'll see that. And each one of these guys has a moment that I call a trust moment. And a trust moment's when you see a dream that's bigger than you, you see something that you need to take a stand for, and you realize, if I don't have God with me, I'm dead. And I'm not going to be able to make it unless God comes through. But still, at that moment, you feel so strongly you need to take that stand that you do. That's the trust moment. And that's what each one of these guys fell into. So they had this moment. We see the Bible talk about this a lot, like this one: trust in the Lord with all of your heart, don't lean on your own understanding. When you get to this trust moment, if you sit there and try to think through it, you'll just never do it. Your understanding is not going to get you there, but you have to understand, because we talk a lot about spiritual battles and we do spiritual warfare, every spiritual battle begins with a moment of trust. And the reason is because without that, you're not battling. Things are happening to us and we're just reeling. We're not fighting back. The fight starts when you decide, I'm going to trust God. And by the way, when you make that declaration, I'm just going to touch God, the enemy does not drop their weapons and run away. In fact, usually they double down. But that's okay, because they can't double down more than God. And so all these guys that we're going to that you see in 2 Samuel 23, that you read about in the book, the Chase the Lion book, all these guys had a moment when their heart just flares up. You know, a spark in their heart gets ignited for something that God's showing them. And they said, you know what? This is where I take my stand. Here is where I'm going to trust God, and that's it. I'm just going to make that decision. And we see Paul talk about this in Romans. He says this. He says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Have you ever met somebody who had hope when they had no right to? You know, this is what he's talking about. He says, you know, look, as you trust in him, you're going to overflow with hope. You're going to find something in your spirit that ignites, and you're going to overflow with hope. And you're going to start thinking about the world differently. David talks about this later. He tries to tell people, look, some people trust in chariots, some trust in horses, but we remember the name of our Lord. He's saying, I'm not counting men here. I'm not counting my soldiers before I go into battle. I'm saying, God, is this what you want me to do? And if so, we're going forward. And that's what these guys will end up doing. They will move forward without counting the people with them, because they've got God with them, and that's all they need. You will never see God's victories in your life until you resolve this crisis of trust in your life, because a lot of us are on that fence. You know, I want to trust God, but here's what I'm looking at. And what I'm looking at tells me I can't trust God. And God's saying, you simply have to stop looking there. You have to trust me. There's this moment that we have to do that. And so each one of these guys does that, and it just ignites something in them, and then it sends them on a search that leads them to David. Every one of them. So last week we kind of talked about where this was. This is after David starts running for his life. This is after he's already killed Goliath. He's been in Saul's care for a while. He's led some of Saul's armies into victories for Saul. And then Saul becomes jealous of him and tries to kill him. So David is on the run. Now, last week we saw that when he went on the run, he kind of was hiding out in this cave outside of Jerusalem. And the malcontents start arriving. You got the people in debt who show up. We got the people who are being chased by Saul themselves. They've shown up. Or maybe they've lost their homes to the Philistines who are infringing. And so these guys start showing up. But then something great happens. David moves from hiding in a cave. You know, he's just hiding. He moves out into the open. And he sets up a stronghold for the Lord. And when he does that, when he moves from hiding in the cave to the stronghold, when he sticks his banner in the ground, all of a sudden different people start showing up because now the 30 arrive. Now they didn't show up all together. You know, this is not the immortals marching in this really nice armor. They come in separately, but they will become the 30. These guys will join with David to form probably the greatest army the world has ever known. They never lost a battle. When David was leading them, they would never lose a battle. And they drive out all the people from all of the promised land, and they enlarge the territories. It was the most incredible army ever, and it starts with these 30 guys showing up. But it started when David moved from hiding out in a cave to establishing himself in a stronghold, and then they start showing up. So we're going to talk about one of these guys. In fact, we talked about him a little bit last week. He was one of the three, because the way that 2 Samuel sets us up, there were 30 mighty men, but there are three that are just above them. Everybody said, well, those three were just amazing. And this guy we're talking about today is one of them, but he probably wasn't what you would picture, because he's probably about a 17 or 18-year-old youth, you know, teenager, maybe 20. And he comes there. Now, this must have been an exciting time to be part of David's army, because people were just starting to show up, right? And David didn't know that. It's like he sounded a horn. People just start showing up. So I'm going to tell this first, before I show you the scripture, I'm going to tell this to you how I see it happening in the movie, because you know I think in movies. So I'm going to describe this as it would happen in the movie if somebody did a real movie instead of these things that we get. But if somebody did an actual movie of this, I want to tell you about this guy, Shammah. I'm going to tell you about his tale. Because I pictured starting at the fire, you know, because they would have these watch fires up. They'd set up all around. They don't have enough people for pickets yet. So they set these watch fires around the stronghold. And people kind of just start coming from all over. And what do you ask? Well, what's your story? And Shammah arrives and he says, well, I'm from one of the outskirt towns, and I fought the Philistines. I stood up to them, and now I have no place to go. And so I started seeking out David because I hear, you know, he is the true king. And so everybody says, well, that's amazing. You stood up to the Philistines. How'd that happen? And so Shammah starts telling his tale to everybody. He says, well, what happened was we're on the outskirt town, and the Philistines have been attacking us for some time. First they took all of our sheep, all of our cattle, and then they started in on the crops. And they take the corn, they take the wheat, and when they're all done taking whatever they wanted, they'd burn down the rest. And my village was just kind of scrambling for what was left after the fire. And the only thing we had left, the only thing they hadn't taken yet, was a lentil field. Because it's not very high, you don't see it from the distance. Now, I don't know if you've ever ate lentils, but they're a poor man's food. Now, when you're hungry on a winter's day, lentil soup's pretty good. I don't know if you've ever had a really good lentil soup. It's pretty good. But I asked last night, and I'll ask again, other than lentil soup and maybe a bean salad that had lentils in it, does anybody have a recipe for lentils, anything? Not really, because lentils are just one of those foods, they fill you up. But if you've ever eaten just lentils, they're kind of pulpy and pithy and waxy, and they don't taste all that good. And you can't do a lot with lentils. You can't make lentil bread and all these things. It's a poor man's food, but it'll fill you up. And this is all they had left, right? They had the lentil field. And, you know, Shammah would have been working the lentil field as a worker. He didn't own it. His dad didn't own it. Maybe his uncle owned it. And he's like, we're just working the lentil field. We're hoping to get one good crop out to feed the people. And then something happens. All of a sudden, next to me, this shovel hits the ground. And I look at the shovel and I turn and a person was holding it. It's now running as fast as they can that way. And that's when I turned around and that's when I saw the Philistines. And they just kind of swarm out of the woods. And before we know it, they've just surrounded the lentil field. And I hear everything falling as people scream and run. They just throw down all their tools and they're gone. And suddenly, I'm the only person left I'm standing in the middle of the lentil field, surrounded by Philistines. Everybody's gone. And something inside of me happened. I just thought, not this one. You know, not, I couldn't speak because my throat was constricted with fear. But in my mind, I'm thinking, not this lentil field, not this day, not as long as I stand. And I picked up my weapons, a shovel and a hoe. And I thought, you cannot have this lentil field. That's an amazing story, right? He's surrounded. And you know, everybody's like, well, what happened next? You know, and he's real silent for a very long time. And then finally he says this, what happened next is they attacked. And then God entered the battlefield and won a great victory. And everybody's kind of waiting to hear more details. Well, you know, how'd you beat him? Which weapon did you use? And that's it. He's done with his tale. And, you know, people kind of, I see, kind of leaving the fire. I'm like, well, that was the dumbest story. What, this guy, this kid can't tell the story at all. What do we mean, and God won a victory? That's it. And they're kind of grumbling to themselves as they leave, you know. But one guy doesn't. One guy walks over to the biggest tent that's there and opens it up and says, hey, David, there's a kid out here who tells stories just like you do. Because that's David's story too. If you look how David tells the story, when he goes before Saul, if you remember, he arrives. He's just a shepherd. That's all he is. He has no business being on the battlefield at all. He's not a soldier. He arrives on a battlefield and he sees Goliath. He hears what Goliath says and says, someone ought to shut him up. But everybody else is too afraid. So he goes to the king. He says, well, I'll shut him up for you. I can do that. And the guy says, you can't fight this guy. You're a shepherd. You, there's no way you can fight this guy. And watch what David says. He says, your servant killed both the lion and the bear. By the way, amazing. You know, we've talked about David in the past. I've shown you the pictures of the bear and the lion that he would have killed. We've seen videotape. Nobody kills lions and bears. Nobody, let alone shepherds. Didn't we see that show? It was on TV, The Great Indoors. Did anybody see that? It's kind of a funny millennial versus Gen X kind of a story, but there's this guy who's like an expert outdoorsman, and he's like trying to help this magazine out, and says, okay, we're going to do a story on five things to do if you're attacked by a bear. Well, give us some, go. And he says, what do you do? What's the first thing you do if you're attacked by the bear? And the guy says, you die. And there is no two, three, and four. He says, that's it, you die. If you're attacked by a bear, you die. But David didn't. He was attacked by the bear and he beat it. Now, you know, at that moment when he told them, you know, all these soldiers standing around, they fought a lot of battles, but they never killed a bear. They never killed a lion, certainly not with nothing but bare hands and a knife. And so David says, well, I killed a lion and a bear. You know, they're waiting to hear this story. Whoa, how'd you do that? Watch what he says. He says, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me here. Basically, God won a great victory that day. That's all he's saying. He's not telling them how it happened. He says, here's how God kept me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear. And so I know he's going to help me with this Philistine. And that's all he'll say about the battle. I don't think David bragged about his battles very much at all, right? Because he knew that God was winning them. And the thing about God's warriors, that's kind of consistent among them. If you really talk to a warrior for God, they're always talking about what God did, not what they did. And I'm going to take a little diversion here, but I have to tell you a story because it's going to happen this week. Victoria and I went down to Virginia. You know, I was thinking about this, you know, the God protecting you from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear. And so we're driving down to Virginia. And I didn't take this, but this is Route 95. I don't know if you've been on this. But it's like this two-lane road where you're separated for a long time. And it always happens when you're on 95. Some of you have driven it. You end up drafting like race car drivers. You know, you're like about 8 feet away from the car in front of you. And we're not going 200 miles an hour, but we're going 70 or 80 down the road, much closer than we need to be. And sometimes it starts stressing me out because I like to have enough room, you know. But if you back up a little bit, what happens? A car shoots in front of you. So there's really nothing you can do. You're drafting down the road, and you're heading down the road there. And this was happening to us. And we're listening to a sermon of a preacher I really like. And he was talking about how God's prayers can protect us, like from the paw of the lion, the paw of the bear, you know. And he was saying sometimes someone will pray protection over you. And what happens is the devil set up an accident for you, but he diverts you to someplace else, and the accident never happens. And Victoria says, well, that's kind of cool. I said, oh, that's kind of stupid, you know. She says, why? I said, well, maybe God diverted you. Maybe diverted you and you would have found money. Who knows? It's hypothetical. It's maybe, you know. And she goes, oh, you never like anything. I said, well, you know, but I just, we need a better example than that. I just think it's a very good example. So we drive and the sermon ends. I turn on the comedy channel because I listen to jokes, and we're driving down this road, and this guy comes right in front of me because I backed off too far. I'm like, man, I'm tired of dealing with with this. So I pulled over into the slow lane. There was a truck in front of me, so I knew I was going to slow down, but at least no one would cut in front of me. You know, so I'll just slow down. That's okay. So I slow down, and about 30 seconds later, this guy makes his next move, but he doesn't quite make it, so he backs up and then goes again. But what this does, it starts off a chain reaction. This guy puts on his brakes suddenly. This guy swerves. This guy jams on his brake, but doesn't make it, so he hits this guy, and behind him, the truck behind him hits. Right as I pass right by all of it. And I went, wow. And Victoria's knitting, right? So I said, did you see that? And she's like, no. And you know how sometimes you're like in a near accident, and you feel that adrenaline, you know, and you kind of, I didn't have any of that. I was like, wow, did you see that? And she goes, no, what happened? I said, well, and I started describing it. And she goes, huh, just like we were just listening to. I thought, huh, it was just like we were just listening to, you know? And like, I understand there's coincidences in the world. I get that. I understand if you're driving too close, you're probably going to have an accident. If you're not driving too close, you probably won't have an accident. But this was right after that sermon. And that's too much for me to call just a coincidence, you know? And I believe it was just God saying, Mark, I am that good. You know, I can do this in such a way that you don't even feel it. Because that's how, even though I saw it, I didn't even feel it. He can save us from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear in ways that we don't even sow. And I said, basically, God, that's great, but always let me see it. I want to see the lion before you save me. Because I want to be able to give you the glory. I want to be able to see that. So that's my side sermon. You get that for nothing. Okay, so here's the actual scripture that I based that whole Shammah story from. Here it is. Shammah says this. The Philistines were gathered together in a troop where there was a plot of ground full of lentils, and the people fled. Now, this word for troops is interesting because it's not usually used in a military sense. It's actually usually used for a living organism, like a swarm of ants. And so this is how they came out. They came out like a living organism, and that's what Shammah saw. And so they thought, we're going to come and they're going to run. And everybody did. But there's one thing that Shammah knew in the base of his heart, even as all the Philistines gathered around him, you cannot surround God. You just can't. And so he's like, I don't know what's going on here, but some spark in him was lit, and he picked up those tools and says, I'm going to be here. And he took his stand in the midst of the plot. And this is the most important part of his story. He took his stand. He says, you know what? No more. Not again. You took the corn, you took the wheat, you took the sheep, you took the cattle, but not this one. I'm taking my stand right here. And then when he tells the story later, and this is why I know that this is how Shammah told the story. This is all we know about it. Other stories, by the way, in 2 Samuel 23, we get more details. Not from this one. Because Shammah didn't give us more details. He simply said, you know what happened? God won a great victory. That's what happened. For all I know, God brought fire down from heaven. We don't know what happened there because Shammah wasn't talking. He was simply saying, no, this isn't my great story of being a mighty warrior. This is God's story. Warriors of God will not tell their story. They will tell of his glory. And that's how you know you're talking to a true warrior of God. If you're talking to one, and sometimes, like, I've had the opportunity to meet some pastors that I really admire, and you get to talk to them, and sometimes it's all about them. And sometimes it's all about God. And let me tell you who the true warrior of God is. Because God's warriors cannot stop talking about what he's done. And they're always saying, this is amazing. I got to tell you something else God did. Oh, and something else God did. And something else I've noticed, the stories are recent. I always get nervous when I get a pastor telling me about something God did from 20 years ago. You know, is God still alive? Are you still alive? Wasn't there something more recent than 20 years ago? How about, you know, recent? So, but I want to get back to this idea that he took a stand. Why in the world would you fight for a bean field? Now, that's a dumb place. Why not take a stand in the cornfield? You can do things with corn or wheat. You can make bread. Why the bean? And all I can say is, for one thing, this is where Shammah was. So this is where he took his stand. But we also have to understand, when you're looking at bean field, which is kind of this little tiny nondescript thing, not very valuable in terms of commerce, you have to understand God's economy. He will not relinquish one lamb, one child, or one bean sprout to the enemy. In God's economy, one is all it takes. Jesus went 13 miles out of his way to meet the woman at the well, just to bring her. One is all it takes. Jesus talks about the good shepherd, right? And he says, if there's one lamb lost, what does he do? He goes and finds it and brings it back to the other 99. One is all it takes. When the bear came and took the lamb, one lamb, David went after him and killed the bear because it's not acceptable to lose one lamb. And God has this sense. He says, look, you may not think that's important, but until you stand up for it, it isn't. And we have to get to this idea that God is calling us to take a stand. He's calling us to take a stand in our marriages. He's calling us to take a stand for our families, in our townships. He's calling us to take a stand. Enough is enough. We have to stop letting the enemy just take things back. And we're just giving them up and running away. In Corinthians, he puts it this way. Be on the alert. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men. Be strong. The old King James says, quit ye like men. I love that expression. Quit ye like, I don't even know what that means, but it sounds cool. Quit ye like men and stand. In fact, in Ephesians, where Paul's talking about the armor of God, we always get off on the armor of God. We talk about that a lot. But watch how he describes it before he gets there. Be strong in the Lord and the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God so that you'll be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's against the world, forces of darkness, and against the spiritual forces of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you'll be able to resist the evil day, and having done everything, stand firm. We need to start taking some stands in our life. There's a really wonderful story. It's a true story. It took place in World War II, the Battle of the Bulge. And I'm not going to go into the big history lesson here, but the Battle of the Bulge starts off with a great loss. And the Allied forces are thrown in retreat. And then they regroup, and it turns into a great victory. But that's day two. This story takes place right after day one. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen videos of battles where they call retreat, but everything goes crazy in terms of retreat. So you're losing before that, but there are certain sections that's holding firm. But as soon as the retreat sound, everybody turns and runs, because, oh my gosh, if you get overrun and the enemy gets behind you, you're in trouble. And so what happens, a lot of times soldiers literally drop their weapons and just run. It's a scary time because you're afraid of getting shot in the back, and you're running for your life, literally, and it splits up and goes everywhere, and you hope that you can regroup later. But right now, if we've lost and we're retreating, we got to go, go, go. And the German panzer tanks have broken through. And they all took off. They took off running. And so everybody's going, and everybody's erratic, and they're going over the hill. They don't know how far to run. They don't know where the rest of them went to. I may have gone to the wrong side of the hill. I might be all alone, and I'm going to be surrounded now by Germans. They don't know. And so this story's about this. This is called a tank destroyer. It's literally made to blow up tanks. And there's a little crew, and it got separated from everybody. And they come down the hill, and they're trying to find people. They're kind of swerving around looking. And they see a guy who's digging a foxhole in the middle of the field. And they go, well, this guy might need a ride or something. So they go rolling up to him to see how things are going. And a guy sees him coming. He stops digging his foxhole, and he says to the commander of the tank destroyer, are you looking for a safe place to park that? And the guy says, well, yeah. And he says, okay. Well, you can pull that right behind me right there. And then he says this, because I'm the 82nd Airborne, and this is as far as the bastards are going. And you know what happens? He pulls it behind this guy, and the entire Allies form up ranks, and then they start pushing back from that moment on. This guy was a private first class, Vernon Haught, and he told the truth. He says, I'm the 82nd Airborne. This is as far as they're going. We need that kind of a faith. You know, we need to say, you know what? This is as far as they're going. And sometimes we give up stuff we've won. And that's the horrible, horrible thing. We fought so hard for it, and then we just give it back up. And it could be a struggle in your own life. You know, it can be, you know, maybe it's a problem with alcohol. And boy, I got to the point where I stopped going to this bar, and I wasn't going there anymore. But every now and then, I'd still fall off the wagon, and I'd have a drink at night. And so, whatever, I'll just start going back to the bar. You won that fight. That bean field's yours, and now you're giving it back to the enemy. You know, I got to the point where, you know, I finally broke it off with that ex-girlfriend I was flirting with online on Facebook. But you know what? I'm still not hitting it off with my wife like I used to. I'm going to go back and see what she's doing. You won that fight. You know, we had that bean field won, and we walk away from it, and we just give it to the enemy. There are things in our lives, battles we've won, that we're just giving back to the enemy as though they don't matter. And God's saying, no, I need you to defend every bean field. I need you to take a stand. And I know that sometimes it gets depressing. And I know it seems the enemy's on the move. And it seems like the army of God's in retreat. And I know it seems that the enemy now, you know, they may get the White House. They may get Congress. They've already got the media. They already have the universities. They're moving into our schools. They're moving into our township. But there comes a time when we have to say, you know what? We are Spirit Chapel. We are a unit in the army of the living God. And this is as far as the bastards are going. we have to take a stand. We have to say, this is where we will make our stand. We're going to give up no more ground. There's not a bean sprout, and there's not a lamb, and there's not a child, and there's not a marriage, and there's not a family. We're not giving up because we are the army of the living God. We have to have that courage. Put on the armor of God, and having done everything, stand firm. You will never win your battles unless you start holding on to the ground you've already won. We'll never make a forward progress if we start keep giving away what we've already won. We have to stand firm and say, not this plan, not this marriage, not this family, not this child, not this township. We stand firm in God. Would you all please pray with me?